Should I tell you my joke now?
Sure.
It's really dirty.
Great.
It might not make the podcast.
It probably won't.
From an HR standpoint, you're going to tell me if it actually can make the podcast.
So the big question is this. How are leaders like you that recognize people and technology are the backbone of the company they're building continue to make progress when they have no clear idea on how to develop individuals and utilize technology in a way that helps them remain profitable? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. This is Tom and Michaela, and welcome to the Heart and Hustle Podcast.
So, what do you call an IT teacher who touches his students?
I don't know. What?
A PDF file.
Oh, my.
Horrible joke, but funny.
That's terrible.
It's terrible.
I tell you, Soren Group employees are the king of dad jokes, though. Like, those things fly back and forth all day long, and it's just like one eye roll after another. It's they're such terrible dad jokes.
It's funny because I see them on TikTok all the time. It's the, you know, the bros or bros with hats or whatever they are. Those two guys sitting back and forth just making each other laugh with dad jokes.
What do you call a magician that loses his magic? Ian.
Gosh.
It's quite funny.
It is funny.
You know,
dad jokes are the best.
My jokes are the best. They're not my dad times 10, kind of.
So. Yeah.
Anyways, phenomenal weekend. I cannot express enough on like how much fun I had on, especially Friday night.
Yeah.
This past week. It was kind of a mishap kind of getting everybody there, but on Friday, the Soren Group, we sponsored the Lincoln Diocese to come to a movie with us. And we rented out an entire theater in Lincoln, and it was to specifically get as many nuns and priests from the diocese as we can in one room to watch Father Stu.
It was so much fun.
It was.
They loved it.
They loved it.
It was a great movie.
It was a phenomenal movie. I think it was good acting in that movie.
It was a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was good and
good story.
And selfishly, it was, you know, I wanted to make sure, like, you know, these clients of ours could have a lot of fun to kind of get together. And, you know, I think this was their first outing in like 2 years since the pandemic started. They were very happy about it and they were excited. And, you know, towards the end of the movie, or actually at the end of the movie, walking out and even walking in there, we got a lot of, you know, bless you guys. This is awesome. We're so excited to be doing this. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. But very selfishly, I think I told you this before, but I wanted really to see the reaction of the nuns and the priests in this movie, because in the movie, not to spoil anything, but in the beginning of the movie on how they're building up to when he kind of joins priesthood, I guess, if you would, it's not risky by any means, but it's definitely, there's some pieces and some parts in there that are very interesting.
Interesting.
And, and they're funny. And, but when you're surrounded by, you know, a lot of these people from the church, the meaning of the jokes goes so much deeper
right.
than what they do to what I would consider a normal person like myself.
A normal person.
Or I guess a non-clergy member.
Non-Catholic.
Not Catholic, but non-clergy member. So like, you know, living and breathing, you know, as a nun, as a priest, those jokes have far different meaning and more profound meaning than they would to probably I know of myself and you.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, and not funny, ha ha, but it was comical because there was a scene in the movie where Mark Wahlberg, Stuart, he is in a cemetery, and during that scene, he gets mad and upset at like God, and he punches Jesus in the chest.
The statue.
Yeah. This big cement statue. And I kid you not, there were I the entire movie theater of I could hear the nuns, I could hear the priest. There was a big gasp, like, oh. And I laughed, and I thought, not laughing in a bad sense, but laughing in like, it was amazing on how that action, that one thing, made an entire room just, it just sucked the breath back. I think it almost gave him anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, it was an abomination to them.
It know? Was.
How dare they hit the statue of Jesus?
I know.
Was it Jesus or Mary? I don't remember. I think it was Jesus.
Yeah. It wasn't Mary. Yeah. It was definitely Jesus. So. Yeah. But yeah, it was amazing. But I think this level of anxiety and then I could just feel it in the room. It just jumped. And that was, I think, one of the first ones when there were maybe a dozen more scenes like that, but yeah. It was crazy.
It was fun to hear them giggle at certain parts too.
They just, were.
You know, like you said, some of the jokes and some of the things that happened throughout the movie. It was so much fun. It was such a blessing to me to be able to see the joy on their faces and how much fun they had during that time. So it was good.
I was happy that nobody got up and walked out. I mean, I was actually quite in the moment that I was like, okay, are we going to have one person get up and leave?
But yeah, I didn't.
Nobody did.
No, it was a pretty decently clean movie. Yeah. So it was safe.
Yeah, but it was safe. It was also a good movie too. I really enjoyed it. And then, I kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit about anxiety and about that piece of it, because I read an article, I think it was maybe a week ago or so now. I'll find it here. We got to make sure we get the clip for Victoria. But this man, I believe, this gentleman who worked for a organization of, I think a bigger one, I guess, it was his birthday coming up. And that organization typically celebrates birthdays of all the employees. And he came to his manager and he says, hey, listen, I don't want a birthday party. I don't want you to celebrate my birthday. Just ignore it. I don't want to take part in it. I'm just not that type of person. Just kind of just make it another day. And that manager or that company did not heed his advice. Yeah. They basically said, listen, we're going to celebrate your birthday. You're one of us, your family. We are going to celebrate this day and get cake and ice cream or whatever they do. And they do for all the other employees. And that's what they did. And they did this and it caused apparently so much anxiety in this person. Mm-hmm. That they had to, I mean, they couldn't work anymore. They literally were so rot filled with anxiety where they had to leave and essentially quit. And he then afterwards
sued the company.
He sued him basically for creating so much work anxiety mm-hmm. for him. And he could not complete his job. He could not function as an employee anymore. And therefore I think he was, I got to read the article. I'm not sure how many years, but, He just couldn't work due to that event. And ultimately, upon suing his employer, he came out with $450,000 in lost wages, emotional damage, and basically saying that the employer caused undue stress on the employee by throwing him a birthday party for which he adamantly said he did not want to have. Now, HR pro sitting to my left, what do you think?
I was super disappointed in the whole situation because as an employer, I mean, you hate celebrating your birthday. You do not like to have it acknowledged. You don't like people saying happy birthday. You don't like the whole thing.
I do not.
So I understand that. Like, I get that.
But I do it for different reasons, not to interrupt. I'm not going to go there. I do it for different reasons than anxiety. That's not my case at all.
Not anxiety at all. But I understand and I respect the fact that you don't want people to make a big deal out mm-hmm. of your birthday, even though sometimes we want to.
There you go.
However, so I really do feel like the employer should have respected that. But at the same point, if that is going to cause a lawsuit in mm-hmm. which an employee wins $450,000 mm-hmm. because of damages, we are in a world of hurt.
We are. I agree.
As employers, as employees, mm-hmm. as a society. It's crazy to me. We also read an article this week about the amount of employees, several, who are suing left and right because employers are asking people to come back to the office.
Yes.
And that ask saying, hey guys, pandemic's over, we're in the clear, let's all, you know, get back to what we call normal.
And this is a phased ease into normal. Mm-hmm. This isn't like, okay, everybody starts back at work Monday full time. This is a couple days a week right now, or maybe a couple half a days a week right now.
So that is causing employees so much anxiety that they are turning around and suing those employers, and they are winning.
They are winning. And you know why they're winning?
Why?
So the article was...
Because we've been doing it this long.
You're exactly right.
We've been doing it this long. We've proven that we can make it happen and be productive and still work. Mm-hmm. So why should I have to come back into the office?
The burden of doubt is on now the employer to show why that presence of that person is needed in the office when for the past 2 years they have had that person working from home from a remote environment and their reviews have been just fine. There's been no performance issues. And obviously there are some people that that have had performance issues, or maybe the typical, the mouse is moving and we're not working. But by large on the whole, the individuals that we're talking about, they had zero performance issues. They had zero productivity issues. They were a valuable member of the team. They were all in and they're happy. And then all of a sudden, boom, now you have to come back to the office. Well, that in itself, as you said, is causing anxiety and grief. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I don't have to go. There's no reason for me to go back. You just can't say, well, you have to come back now when I've been a productive member of the team for now for 2 years in this role, and I'm very happy.
So HR issues aside, as an employer, what does that speak to you?
Well, are you asking me this question?
I'm asking you this question as an employer.
As an employer, I would and do going through that process, reframe my thought before that question would even be asked. Because I think if you took myself, date me back 5, 6, 7 years, this whole work at home thing, I would like, you know, people are trying to get out of work. They just don't want to show up. They want to kind of fake it until you make it, you know, but coming through this and having, you know, remote employees ourselves, and also people that are going to start working more remotely and hiring people, maybe, who knows, who lives in our, you know, a person that lives in our city that is still going to work from home, even though they're a few miles away. I'm okay with it because I think there's a lot of, you know, ways to measure productivity upon a person than seeing them in the office in a day. I mean, look at us. You're considered a remote employee. Kinda. You're not in the office every day. You're in our other office, our, you know, the Nest, but you're not in our main office in downtown Lincoln. But the environments are the same, it's still work, but you're just as productive as anybody. Mm-hmm. So I think it becomes a thing, is it more control? Is it more the managers have to see, feel, touch, and watch them work and kind of feel like they're babysitting to make them feel like they're managing? Because they can't manage remote employees?
Yeah, I think it all depends on the way the organization is set up, the way they work, the work that they do, how they collaborate, mm-hmm. how they utilize, you know, tools and technology to manage those remote employees. I think there's a million different questions mm-hmm. to ask and a million different ways to answer them. And I don't think there's a blanket answer for all employers out there, because there are some teams, despite what industry they're in, where that face-to-face contact communication mm-hmm. just works better for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think it's fair for an employer to have that, the right to kind of set up their business the way they want to set it up. Right. Taken away from them because of anxiety from an employee.
Yeah. And to echo that, there was another article that said that of these employers that are asking their employees to be at the office every day or start to come back to the office, you know, 3 days a week or whatever. I don't know the percentage of it. It was high, like 40%, maybe 35 to 43%, somewhere in that mark. The leadership teams we're all working from home, and they have zero intent on ever returning back to the office. So the same people that are telling their employees, hey, you have to go to the office, you have to be there every day, blah, 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 the leadership teams are at home.
Yeah, that's a double standard.
And that is a huge double standard.
Yeah, that's not okay.
No, it's not okay.
No.
So.
No, like I said, there's a million questions to ask in that whole scenario and a million ways to answer it.
But getting back to the anxiety point, you know, we see it every day. Obviously, we meaning you and I, you see it within, you know, people or clients that you work with. I see it within teams that I work within. And the anxiety thing is a real deal.
Real deal.
And I think a lot of this anxiety is not just work. It's external factors.
Oh, yeah.
It's the, you know, almost close to double digit inflation rates over the past 8 months. Mm-hmm. It's expenses and food and cars and just life in general. And
it's family life. It's relationships. It's, you know, it's outside forces. It's inside forces. It's a million different reasons that people have, you know, depression or anxiety or whatever it may be, but it's drastically affecting our workforce. Drastically, it's affecting everything we do. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have to figure out, okay, as employers, where's the balance of having that empathy and understanding that, you know, we kind of call it that work-life balance, and just getting that everybody has a life outside of work, but at the same time, we have a job to do, and you are hired as an employee to fulfill that role.
Right.
And when all these other influences, including work, are affecting a person's emotional and mental health, like, how far does the employer have to go to make sure that person is okay? And even, I mean, then you have the other issue where that employer tries to do everything they can to make sure that person is okay, and that person isn't okay, whether right. they don't want to help themselves, or they don't know how to help themselves, or they're not taking the help that's being offered them. And what do you do with that?
It's a really tough question. And everyone is a one-off situation.
Everyone is a one-off situation.
I just know, as an employer, I think you have the ultimate responsibility to ensure that you're not putting undue stress on people, knowing that their limit
is... What is that, though?
Well, what undue stress is, you know, if you know person X is overwhelmed and they're working hard and they're stressed, and maybe they're stressed over family issues, maybe it's work issues, maybe you don't know, but you can understand that they're stressed and they're off their game. The last thing an employer is going to do at that moment in time is come and pile another, you know, book of TPS reports and said it's due tomorrow at noon. So I think there are employers or are managers that do that. They know specifically there is an issue, and they're really just turning a blind eye to it. Just, it doesn't matter. Get your stuff done and go.
Mm-hmm.
I think decent managers or good managers that really understand their employees, they're going to start to understand and, you know, feel this thing out well beforehand, because they're going to see their, you know, their employees or their staff kind of, something's off with Mary today, or something's off with Susan today. And a week later thinking, man, she's not who she used to be 2 weeks ago. What's going on with her? And then 3 weeks in, you're thinking, oh my gosh, I know something's wrong. Well, hopefully within the first week or two, you're going to start to understand, hopefully, what's going on with her to help try to fix it so it does not impact her job, because those TPS reports are going to come. There is going to be a point where there's a deadline, there's an outage, there's something, and that stress is going to jump on that person. And you know it's coming. It's a freight train. It will be there. It is there in every job and every position. And it's now your duty as a manager to really help figure out what's wrong with Mary Jo or Susan or whoever it is. And it's not fair for a manager to say, well, you go figure it out. I'm going to figure out my stuff and go, and you're just going to have to deal with it when life comes.
I agree with you to a point, but it's not an employer's responsibility to be that person's therapist either.
No, it is not.
And that's where, you know, despite that, there's all sorts of levels of undue stress. What I consider undue stress may not be what you consider undue stress. And when I hand somebody a job description and say, can you fulfill these duties? And they say yes, and we hire them, I fully expect that they can handle those duties.
But you,
and if their personal life or their whatever it is causing them not to be able to do that job, how far does an employer go? I mean, we have EAPs, we have, you know, we give time off to make sure that they can have the time they need to rest and recruit.
I see your point.
But how far does an employer have to go to keep from putting on that employee undue stress? And what is undue stress? I mean, for some people, it's coming to work, just simply getting to work on time is undue stress.
Well, no, and I'm talking undue stress, meaning that, you know, if I know...
And I know what you're talking about.
I know you understand.
I understand what you're talking about, but I have had multiple scenarios, even over the last 9 months, where people are breaking down and saying, I just can't do it. It's too hard. It's too much. So, you know, the expectations are oh so high. And I'm like, we're asking pretty basic things right here. We are asking pretty basic things. We are not expecting you to hold a role that you cannot handle.
And _however, with a less than 2% employment rate in our lovely state, you as an employer are kind of behind the eight ball on that one, because the reality is that if that person would leave, and maybe they should go, it's going to be very difficult to replace said person.
And it's going to cause undue stress on the other employers that are undue left stress.
Right.
Left behind.
Right. Yeah, so it's like you're in this weird world where you have to help as much as what you can. You do not enable the person, but yet you're caring and you're kind. But there becomes a point when if that person's undue stress, or if that person's stress is now causing bleeding into the team and performance issues with the entire team, where they're all, you know, chatting and discording and everything else and complaining about the environment or the toxic culture, that's just feeding into the toxicity, and it just doesn't stop. And that, ma'am, is...
You called me ma'am.
I know I did. I wasn't calling you a sir, but last I checked, you ain't no sir.
No.
So anyways, but it's just like the word, like that toxic culture, once it starts, it seems like it just snowballs fast, and you get everybody just upset and stressed and full of anxiety. And
yeah, that toxic culture thing is another buzzword.
That's a buzzword. I hate that.
We'll talk about that in another episode.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that tonight. That's, no. That's horrible for me.
Yeah. So. Anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's lots of things going on out there, and you know, people are stressed right now. There's a lot going on in the world, and I think everybody's kind of sitting back still, going, "Oh, what the hell is going on?" Mm-hmm. And everybody's kind of trying to find their bearings and their place right now, and people are having a hard time.
I will say though that having from an owner's perspective, from my perspective, I feel that having remote employees is a very good thing for a company, because I think it takes a manager to actually learn how to manage and set expectations for somebody that they do not see every day. And I think by having that person in the office, that manager can really just be a babysitter and not really manage, because it takes effort and work to call, email, text, FaceTime, video your remote staff that you don't see every day. And you have to have check-ins and, you know, holding each other accountable, not just holding the employee accountable, but the employee holding the manager accountable as well. And so I think it is harder. Mm-hmm. I think it's more difficult. And I think I feel, I understand that's why a lot of managers do not want remote employees, because A, lack of trust. They feel they can't manage that person. They will say, their performance may go down, or
out of sight, out of mind.
Productivity goes down, out of sight, out of mind. And even, you know, in our world, you know, we have employees who have life, they have duties. They pick up their kids from school, or they have to drop them off, or they have, you know, dance lessons at 2 or whatever it is. And, but yet we still get the job done and we work around that, and people know what their expectations are, and we manage to that and live to that.
Mm-hmm. I think we kind of have a unique business in which that can work really well. We've had it go not so well too.
We have positions, right? We have certain positions that does work well in, but we also have positions that they have to be in the office every day. You know, because there's lots of moving parts. And so certain people, certain positions, you're right, it does work. Typical services, retail industries, you know, B2C type custom, you know, service, you need people there. You just can't work from home.
Right.
But certain people in a B2C can, the accountant or certain individuals can work from home.
Well, and then you, I don't know if the companies that we were talking about earlier are these types of companies, but then you have the companies where you have some positions that really do work well from home, mm-hmm. and they can do mm-hmm. that, and they can make that happen. You have other positions where it doesn't work. We work with multiple companies where some you can and some you can't.
That's right.
And then the ones that can't are upset because the ones that can, they never see them and they're never around and they don't know what's going on here. And there's that division. Mm-hmm. And I think some employers are just like, you know what? Screw it. We want everybody back. Yeah. It's too hard to manage this.
Yeah. See, I am much in the middle, where I think having like a common work area, workspace that is comfortable, couches, chairs, you know, in an environment. So when employees are remote, they have a gathering place to go to, like a community center, if they're local. So say if you have a city with, you know, 10 or so remote employees and they live in the same city, or maybe even 3, but you have an area, and it could be a storage shed for all I care, but you have an area that's decked out a little bit nice. It's comfortable. It's relaxing, but it's kind of this co-working space where the teams can go and kind of work together. I'm not talking co-working space like traditional co-working. I'm talking something that's set up like the office, looks like the office, and you know, it's your own place. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what we're trying to look for in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And even though we know those employees will probably be working from home most of the time, we want a space that they can go to relax and chill and hang out, even if it's like 1 or 2 days a week or for a few hours, but they can collaborate, be together and draw their diagrams or whatever they have to do, engineer whatever they have to, but it provides a sense of community. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have that, just like, you know, I was in Nelson, Nebraska several years ago and getting gas, and I walk in and these, you know, 82-year-old farmers are sitting in the back of the gas station playing cards, reading the newspaper, having their morning coffee. Mm-hmm. And that's the community. And it's just like they enjoy going there to be together.
But what if they don't?
I think most of them are trying to get out of the house with their wives, but that's just my personal thought there.
I know, but I'm saying it's the employees who are suing that the employer is causing all this anxiety that they don't want to communicate. They don't want to collaborate. They don't want to drive to the co-working space or the community space for 1 day a week, because why should they have to?
And I agree with that. As long as their work is getting done, but I just think it's up to the employer to provide that ability for those that do, because mm-hmm. those that do should not be penalized to work at home when they just don't want to. So, I don't know. That felt like a big circle.
It was a big circle. It was.
I don't know. Closing thoughts?
Yeah, because I'm going back to that. I am going back to that, because if you have that employee,
oh boy,
who doesn't want to even, you know, come to that space for 1 or 2 days a week to work with their peers, what does that speak to you?
It speaks to me in such a way that if that person is getting his or her job done, they're engaged, they are, you know, part of the team, you know, if
well, what I'm saying is typically those types of people are not the employees that are engaged.
Then that is a whole nother issue.
Yeah.
But forcing them back into work, you know, I could probably find 10 issues to ensure that some sort of performance improvement plan is written for that individual for his or her lack of engagement over the course of several months. And if that happens 2, 3, 4 times, life happens. They're going to have to be one of the 2%. So not much I can say about that.
Okay.
But that's my HR, yeah. My professional HR role coming out.
Your professional HR role.
Yeah, and the joke I said earlier, whether now that makes the podcast or not, is a whole different story. We'll probably have to use some fine editing there.
Yeah.
Maybe just a bunch of bleep, 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 bleep. Bleep. All right. Well, I think that's it. I got nothing more to say. You got a lot to say, but not nothing more about this topic.
No, I got nothing.
Oh, you got something.
I got nothing.
You got something, something.
I got nothing.
There you go. All right. Check you guys later. See ya. And have a great start to your week. Or middle week, whatever it is now.